Welcome to episode 37 of the Just Keep Spinning podcast. My name is Andrea. I'm here with...
I'm Andrew.
And we actually have a special guest today. And we've actually had her on before, but it was more of a group, like a panel thing. So now we have her on her own. So go ahead and say hi, muchacha.
Hi, what's up? I am muchacha.
So I'm sure most of you know her, even if you didn't for some reason listen to the Rose Wax episode. Everybody knows Mo, honestly.
I'm out there. I get around.
She's a mover and a shaker, right?
Yes, that's what I do.
So she is our guest today. So we're going to be interviewing her to get a little bit more in depth into her background and stuff like that. So it was something that we did bring up, Andrew and I, to each other. We wanted to interview each individual member of Rose Wax to kind of get a little bit more into your guys'
background. That makes sense. I mean, it's cool because we all as a collective come together and hold each other. We have like this thin thread, but like we can cut that thread and be by ourselves and do things by ourselves. I mean, that's what Angelica does. She does that. You know, Bree's a mom. She does her own thing. And then I, of course, do a lot of things. I have my hand everywhere. And recently somebody had told one of my friends that, you know, me and her, and it's not even Rose Wax, it's just that me and her we're all over the place and that we need to pick one thing. And I was like, hell no.
Yeah, you're like, I'm going to do what I love.
You cannot put me in this little square, you know. What is it called? I don't know, Congress or the Senate, I don't know, one of them. They have this thing, it's called pigeonhole.
Yeah, like,
don't pigeonhole me.
Yeah, you're like, if you're going to pigeonhole me, then you don't know me, okay?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Exactly. That's a sticker.
That's, I can put that on some slaps and put them up places.
Yeah, should. Do not.
Yeah, no pigeonholing. No, I love to do lots of things, so...
Yes, so really quick, our Instagram is Just Keep Spinning Podcast. If you want to email and you say you love us, you hate us, submit music, which we're going to get to, because I found out some of the submissions were going to our spam. I just found that out the other day. So you can email us at Just Keep Spinning
Podcast.
Good old
spam.
I know, spam. Not the kind you eat, but the spam in the email. Just Keep Spinning Podcast at gmail.com is our email. And are there any social media handles that you want to give out?
Just Rose Wax Vinyl Club. And mine is... I'm public, so everything I do is out there. There are no hidden agendas, nothing with me. What you see is what you get. Look in the life of me is, it's fun. It's fun. But what it is it's Moni _ Mochacha _ Mata on Instagram. And then on Facebook, it's... Monique Mochacha Sanderson Mata. So you could just do # Mochacha and you'll find me. Google me.
Yo, Google me.
Yo, and shit, you'll I don't Google. I have a Wikipedia page.
You could just Google me.
I'm going to make you a Wikipedia.
I know, right?
After this interview.
I know. It's funny, though. My cousin, he's the one that always says Google me, but he has reason to say that, you know. But I always, like, make fun of him, and so that's my jab at him, Jeremy Arviso.
Okay, like, jab, if you're jab, listening jab. To me, yeah. You're going to jab at you. So really quick, I'm going to highlight some events on Saturday, April 6, 2019 at 8 p.m. The rapper Lay Kelly 47 is coming to Pub Rock Live in Scottsdale, and tickets start at $15. So I talked about her album before. I don't know if you've heard it. It's really good. Acrylic?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that place is really awesome. Anywhere in the house is a good spot. Like, it's worth it. So this is the old Chasers. Pub Rock Live is the old Chasers. So, like, it's such a... You can be almost by the bar, because the way it stands is like the main part where the stage is kind of is sunken in. So the other part is a little bit, it rises a little bit. So that way you could see over the people's heads to the person that's on stage. So I
you're
that.
Like, if you're short, like we are.
Yeah. This is truth.
Like him, he's tall. So no matter where he stands, he's like, oh, I can see. And I'm like, I can't. Like, we get into.
Lift me up. Lift me up.
Lift me up on your shoulder.
Yes.
And then on March 23rd, 2019 at the Press Room, it's going to be Method Man and Red Man with Lucifer, DJ Thought Goss, Drunk Dom in the Roaches. And that's going to be the asshole video premiere. That's what it's called.
That is
for
awesome.
A skate video. So it's presented by Countdown and Vans. So get your tickets. You want to see Jeez, Method Man and Redman together?
Be, yes.
So are you? You're like, show. I'm gonna go, huh?
It's a weekend.
Yeah, I think it's Saturday.
It's,
March 23rd.
I think that's my niece's quince.
You're all damn.
I'll be down the street at Margaret Tan's Park though, so I can steal away.
You can like sneak off.
Yeah. I'll be like, I'll be right back, and not go back. And only to clean up.
Are there any events you wanted to highlight?
Yes, yes, yes. We got this big event that's coming up for La Dama. She's part of Rose Wax Vital Club, recently diagnosed with stage 2 pancreatic cancer. She's going through her chemo treatments. Isn't working. She's having a little bit of difficulty, but, you know, we're helping her financially because that's pretty much all we could do. Prayer and money, good vibes, you know. But the benefit is going to be March 2nd at Desert Rose. We're going to go from 4 to 1 a.m. We have acts such as AYODA. We also have Crate Creepers. We have Rose Wax Vinyl Club. We have Phoenix Funkettos, The Untouchable. There's a couple other people that are kind of fitting into it. We just got to kind of figure it all out. That's going to happen today, so I'll be posting that up, and you can find all the information out. Instagram, Facebook, there's an event page on there. I'm going to be boosting it monetarily this week. We have art that's going to be...
that's what this for the silent auction,
yeah,
right?
We have a silent art auction. So La Locota, we also have La Morena, we have... you know, all about us, James Morales. We also have the SCB crew that is going to be out there painting live for the event. We're going to have two video games from Lemoncade out there. So, I mean, there's going to be something to do. We're going to have a 50-50 raffle to start it off. Yeah, I don't know if you guys know about 50-50 raffles.
So exactly how do those work? Because I always wonder. I can't remember.
So what it is you start off with the base of like $50. Like my base is going to be $50. I'm donating $50. And anybody who puts more money, they get to split the pot. With Bree gets half of the pot and the other person gets the other part of the pot. So that's the raffle. Door raffle is going to be anybody that comes in. It's going to be a $10 suggested donation fee. So whenever you come in, you get a raffle ticket. And there's going to be items that are going to be called out through the night. And it's really cool stuff. Like there's baskets. There's, I know, Working Class Cultura is going to be donating stuff. Chingon Estilo. You know, Valley Favorites. They're all donating. There's a lot of folks that are donating.
Yeah,
things.
Demir Brand, Chacha's Tea Lounge is donating. So the community is coming together.
Azucar. Yeah, and in the South Side, they're donating.
All the proceeds go to Bree's medical
directly
fund.
Directly to Bree. So we're just trying to get her to be able to focus. And, you know, whenever she's with her kids, to be able to take them places and do things, you know, make memories. And
still like, live a normal life.
Yeah,
even though.
Make you know, their, because she does that. She's going out there and she's... the other day she drove herself and her kids to go out and about. That was like right after she did her first chemo treatment. You know, so she's out there fighting and we're right with her. We're standing right next to her. So KDIF is also going to be out there. And Panda Stash. She's going to be out there doing some educational about medical marijuana and that kind of stuff. There's going to be a lot of folks out there and I'm excited. Can't wait. Shouts out to the Rivera family, also the Pimentel family for helping, you know, with the car washes. We've had a couple car washes, a couple Crafty Chicas. She donated some of her own product line to make like Valentine's Day cards and stuff like that for craft night. Las Joyas Peligrosas had a show on Valentine's Day.
I did see that. Did you? That was cool. Yeah. I wanted to go, but I couldn't make it. I wasn't even able to go.
I had to be at work, so I wasn't able to get there. But yeah, we have the whole community chipping in on this effort, and we're excited that we have that outreach and all these people that have a great following are helping.
Yeah, so. And we'll, like I said, she'll post the flyer on the Rose Wax page, and we're pretty much all going to be posting it so that everybody's aware.
Yeah,
and,
we got a week, you know. So we're going to blow it up.
It'll be a nice, positive community event to come together for Bree for a good cause.
This is truth. So that's Saturday. The next day we have our monthly program on KDIF 102.9 LPFM. And what that is it's going to be the Roselax Vinyl Club. We play from 12 to 3 p.m. every first Sunday of the month. We're going to be dipping into other time slots, like through where we want to do more. We want to be on there a little bit more often. So we're excited about that happening, because we used to be on there every Sunday. And, you know, sometimes whenever you're on something every day, it is hard.
I know, because we do this every week.
That momentum to keep it, you know, to keep it fresh, to keep it going. You know, we didn't have a problem with it, but eventually it's kind of like you teeter out. And you're like, okay, I need a little bit of break, you know. But it's good whenever there's a collective of people that come together and they get this all, you know. Like whenever Angelica had something planned one time, I'm the one that took over and I got that day started. So it was cool. So it happened no matter what.
And then you also have your trivia night, is it? Like, yes, well, you do different things, right?
So on my own, along with DJ This Justin, shouts out Justin Webb, and also to John Sagasta, Mike Constantino, Mimi, out at Joba, I host game night now on Wednesdays. So we tried it out for the first month and it's been successful. So I'm going to do another month of it. It's not your traditional trivia night. I try to make it fun. I try to make it like not traditional.
Like more interactive.
Yes,
right?
Interactive is the word. Thank you. So for instance, the first night was improv and we did the Goonies, like come up and, you know, we did the trivia part, but also reenact moments from the film. So that was good. The next time it was Name That Tune, and we did, let's see, girls are really good at trivia. Just letting
really?
You know. Yeah, a lot of our winners are all girls.
See, you hear so, that, Andrew?
You guys just have better memories.
That could be it.
Because you guys don't pay attention. You guys are just like, what? Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. You're like, that's not important. Exactly. And we're like, no, we're putting that in the memory box right here in the front.
Yep.
I need to put that in my lobe. You know?
Wait one sec. Just a heads up, we are at Lemon Cade right now, so if you hear gunshots and stuff like that, it's a video game.
We're not hanging out in South Beach. Yeah,
there are no drive-bys happening right now. They're just killing aliens on the alien game. Yeah. But, and then
so that's at Joba, right?
That's not hydraulic. Yeah, this is not hydraulics you hear in the background either. It's actually somebody shaking up lemonade.
Yeah, it's actual lemonade. Yeah. It's not a car hop or nothing.
Yeah. Although there's one going on tonight.
Exactly.
But yeah, Joba. It's a Joba every Wednesday night from 8 to 10. I get there around 7, so you can come and hang out and visit while we get set up and you can have coffee. They have everything there. They have a full bar and they have food. I love their waffle fries. They have waffles too.
You said waffle fries and my stomach was like, yes, I want to go right now.
It's good, and they have wings too. They have Wu-Tang Wednesday wings.
Oh, okay.
You know, so
We're gonna have to go, babe, one day.
We'd rather make it a point to drive out there.
Well, this last time it was Name That Tune. Oh no, it was the trivia was the first day was the improv. Second Wednesday was Name That Tune. It was fun. We had like rock. And we had like Def Leppard and Metallica and Ozzy Osbourne, like, and it was just snippets of songs. We also had underground hip hop. We had love songs since it was the day before Valentine's Day, and then we had just like kind of.
Angelica should have been there for the love songs.
Yeah, she would have wanted. No, I swear to God, I had Sade in there. Nobody got it right. And it was Ordinary Love.
I know Sade is like her favorite. One
yes.
Of her faves,
yes. But I was surprised. No, wait. Actually, Selena got it right. Her best friend got it right. And she sent a shout out to her because she's like, if it wasn't for Angelica, I would not know so much about Sade. Angelica has a Sade box.
Really? Yeah. I know she has some Sade stuff.
It's a War and Sade box.
That's cool.
Yeah, 45s. And it's this little tiny one, and she's like, nobody's allowed to touch that.
She's like, that's my baby.
She gets aggressive, yeah. So then, but this last time it was a Buzz Bee Spelling Bee, and that was fun. People were really, because I had a dinosaur category. And people really thought I was going to do pterodactyl and T-Rex. And I was like, nah, I'm going to do some ones that you never even heard of. And then I also had like a calo, you know, like it was my Chicano day. So like I had calo words like trucha. You know, like I te guacho, ruca.
You're like, I want to see who all the real ones are.
And yeah. Like, okay. And agavacha is the one that got it.
Really?
Yes. She got all the words right. What? I was like, girl.
Yo, shout out to you.
Yes. She grew up in the South. She's like, what do you think? I grew up in the South. I was like, roll your R's, girl. Roll them R's. But yeah, so next Wednesday, it's going to be the So You Got Jokes. I have Jesse from Nerd With Balls collaborating with me on this. He has a really great podcast. Check him out. He's Glendale born, like 100% about Glendale.
That's good. I always like people that are about their own community. Yeah, you know?
He's really big about that. But like the other day, Carlos Mencia was right outside, not Lemoncade, but just right across the street. He was
for
here.
What?
I guess there was a Latino comedy show, and he was part of it. I was like, that dude had a TV show. Yeah. For so long, and everybody was about him, and he was right here at Off the Cuff. I think it's called Cuff Restaurant or something like that. But yeah, so Nerd With Balls participating with me on So You Got Jokes, which consists of three teams getting together, coming up with a 1 minute or 2 minute stand up routine, and they have to say it. So I gotta find a stand up mic, just say.
So if you really want to do something that's fun and interactive, you might want to like meet some new people. You want to meet Mo.
Yes.
Go out to her night. Trust me, you'll have fun. She's a fun person. Yes. You'll understand by the end of the interview her vibes.
No, I really got good. I like to go out in the crowd and talk to people. And I'm like, hey, is this your friend? No, we came back. And I was like, oh, and they're like, you're fun. And I was like, yeah. I go, is this your first time participating? She was like, yeah, because I get nervous. And I didn't want to participate.
Oh, I thought you were saying you. I'm like, you nervous?
Yeah, I'm talking, and I'm the girl. She's like, I got nervous. And like, I was like, no, what if we get everything wrong? And then it turned out to be easy, and I had all the answers. I was like, see, you don't have to be nervous.
And it's okay if you're wrong. That's the point. You're just supposed to have fun. It's fun. You know?
It's fun. So yeah, shouts out to all the staff out there.
So, as you guys know, like we said, we've had her on before, so we already did her countdown for her number one. So Andrew decided to do something a little different, right?
Yeah, I actually completely forgot about that until right now. So I did today's date in music in 1995, since we were talking about Salinas.
Yes.
And how she got murdered by that bitch.
And my dad.
Yeah.
Yelling at the TV.
So we'll start at number 10. Hold My Hand was Hootie and the Blowfish.
Ooh, 95. Okay.
4 p.m. Sukiyaki.
Sukiyaki.
Sukiyaki. Again. Number 9. Number 8 was If You Love Me, Brownstone.
Oh, I like that one.
Number
that
7 is You Gotta Be. It's Desiree.
Desiree.
Desiree. Yeah. There's an apostrophe in there, so it threw me off. And I suck at.
Yeah. Everybody's gotta be different.
Yeah.
Stage name.
Number 6 was Candy Rain by Soul For Real.
Candy Rain, yes.
Number 5 was Brandy, Baby.
Baby, yeah, that's a good one.
Number 4, The Real McCoy, Another Night.
That was a really good song. I really actually loved that song for some reason. I was all about it. Oh my God.
Was this on last week's countdown, that song? Remember when we interviewed Moni Loca?
I know. That was 95, so her birthday was...
Oh, two Monis in a week.
Right. Oh. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're like love. Eminem.
Moni Love. Moni in the middle. In the middle.
That's what I'm going to name this episode. Moni Love.
That's the name of this episode, Moni Love.
Yeah. Moni Love Part 2.
Part 2.
Jesus. Number 3 was Boyz II Men on Bended Knee.
Aww.
That's a good song.
That's a love song.
Number 2, TLC Creep.
Creep.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that.
Andrea's favorite, number 1, Madonna, Take a Bow.
I'm not a Madonna. I don't hate Madonna. I'm just not super into her like a lot of other people. I think it's because my mom wasn't into Madonna. My mom was into like Janet and other stuff. So like I gravitated more towards that than Madonna. But I have mad respect for Madonna.
So just letting you know, Angelica is super obsessed with Madonna.
I know she loves Madonna. I know she does. That's her girl.
Yes, like you go through her records and dude, Madonna, but no. Oh my gosh. But Take a Bow was such a good...
That song, I believe, was written by Babyface.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it's. I like that song. I like some Madonna songs.
So it was Take a Bow, and then in that, there was a couple other songs.
Because what album was that?
Shoot, I remember whenever she had that video with the two like Asian twins in it, and then her hair was all kind of crazy. Oh, I don't remember what it was called. It was a crazy, crazy looking video, and it was kind of on the verge of techno a little bit, but not really. And I don't remember what it was, but I remember that being one of my favorites. Like, she so reinvents herself all the time. She reinvents herself so much, and she's like, a lot of people give Cher.
And Helica's gonna. If she listens to this, she's going to want to slap us because she's like, I know what album is on. And you guys, Bedtime Stories. Bedtime I had to look stories. It up because I'm a bad Madonna person.
That's the name of the song.
Yeah, okay.
That's
okay,
the name of the song is Bedtime Stories.
Like, it's off of Bedtime Stories.
Yes.
My bad. Sorry, Angelica, if you're listening.
So what happens is in the video, her eyes are her lips and her mouth is her eye.
So did you love it? Because you're like, this is out there.
Oh, yeah. I so did. I was like, yes. I like. So I would, since I was a raver, I used to like whenever mainstream would like recognize some stuff, but like not a real big fan of it going, everything's going mainstream, like Slap My Bitch Up by, Prodigy, mm-hmm. like when that went on.
Do you remember the video? Because it was banned and then they would only show it like late.
After 10 o'clock.
Yep.
And they're in that tunnel and he just like moves his head all crazy, yeah.
And then it's a chick at the end though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a woman. It's mm-hmm. not a man because you're assuming it's a man and at the end you see in the mirror, right? And it's a woman,
mm-hmm.
if I remember correctly.
That was one of the most... commercial things that ever happened in techno for me, and I was like, what?
So I know, as we know, Mo initially, she's from here now, but she's also from New Mexico because that's where you're born. We covered that before, right?
Yes.
And then you moved here, was it when you were like 13?
14. In the prime of my life. No, those are the formative years. I believe that like 14 is your formative years. That's how you're going to be. That's going to be your everything, like your music that you listen to, like everything from 14 to 16. I think that's what forms you as a person. You know
so
what I mean?
So when did you like I know before you said you but you were always going back and forth. So like you had your like stuff you'd pick up from here and you go back to New Mexico. Right. And you would take it over there and stuff. So
when I would record tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whenever I would get because I don't know. Do you guys remember whenever Joey Lawrence from Blossom made, I forget what the name of the song was, but.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So that was like the time whenever he was doing that stuff. I think I was 12 or 13. And I went back to Tucumcari and I had that tape. And then there was one song that I didn't even realize that I recorded, but it was, a techno song, and I can't remember what the name of it was now, but then all of a sudden I was listening to the tape and I was showing my friends because I thought I was so cool. I was like, I am so cool, I have all this music from the big city of Phoenix. I'm like, they have palm trees there, okay? I'm like, you don't even know. They have palm trees.
Yeah, I'm cultured, okay?
They have malls, like, bigger than Amarillo. Like, you know, like, I was...
So, because what city in New Mexico were you from?
Little farm town called Tucumcari. So, it's, like, literally, like, right now, I think it's, like, maybe 4,000 people.
So, yeah. Back then, it was, like, tiny.
No, back right? then, it was more people because had their heyday in the 70s.
Oh,
so, it's crazy because the town is built for, like, 12,000 people. So, every other house is empty. And they're beautiful homes. But, like, Union Pacific and Yellow Freight moved out and then the whole town went down.
Yeah. Well, did I tell you where his dad is from?
No, where is your dad from?
My family's from Las Cruces.
Oh, yes. I love Las Cruces. My favorite restaurant there is Las Trancas. There's a restaurant that I go to all the time there. And they serve northern New Mexican food. But, yes, I like to go to the bowling alley. They have the best nachos there. Where else do I go? My family lives there.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah.
Okay, so I wonder if your family's kind of annoyed because it's probably small there,
it's
right?
Very small. Yeah, it's a real small city.
Yeah.
Like, their mall is, like, tiny.
They have Hastings. Do you know Hastings?
No.
No.
I think we went there once when we were kids.
Dude, it's like Zia.
Oh, wait. Did it close?
I might have.
We passed by it because the last time we were in Las Cruces was in 2005, I think.
It was by it used to be by an IHOP, I think. But Hastings was there. And then, but my family lived by, you know, whenever you go, you're coming from the, like, Alamogordo, and there's this big, huge mountain. And you look back, and there's all these point, it's a pointy mountain, like sharp.
I've only been there once, so.
What is it called? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
It's the Oregon Mountains. I think it's called the Oregon Mountains. But then also everything there is like Oñate, Coronado, like all Spanish.
Well, like I remember
all the conquistadors.
When I went with him, I was like, they're like, oh, we're going. I'm like, okay. And they're like, yeah, like this is like a bigger city, Las Cruces. And I was like, this is like a bigger city?
That's the next big one. It is.
Because it's Albuquerque and then
Las Cruces, right? And then I think it goes Santa Fe and Farmington, Gallup, and that's it. Like Carlsbad, I think Carlsbad's a little bit, or... What is the Roswell?
Yeah,
but that's as big as it gets. But I love over there. Did you take her to Mesilla?
No, so no. We went for like my grandfather actually passed. So okay,
so that's why we went.
Yeah,
but we did go on the freeway and we were laughing because it was like this freeway? Little like.
It's did like you see road. Their little? Did you see their little stack?
Yes.
When it turns into the I-25.
We were cracking up because we were like homesick. So then we went to Peter Piper. So we went to Peter Piper and ate and then like went back to the house where everybody was at. So, but we were like, okay, like we miss home, Arizona. Like it was a weird trip.
Well, I used to go there to visit my cousins and she went to NMSU. And it's different than Albuquerque. Like NMSU is UNM's like rival, blah, you know. And anyway, all where I'm from, everybody pretty much went there instead of to going to Albuquerque to UNM. But you know what was fun? Going to Juarez, because El Paso is right there. Browntown is right there. And we used to go to Juarez and go to...
You get crazy, right?
Yes. No, it was... You pay $10 and it was drink and drown. You could pay $10 to drink all night in a bar.
And how old were you?
I was of age at this time, but my cousins were not, and they went with us, and they were only 16. And I was like, I don't know if we should bring them. But, dude, whenever you know when you're there. And so I was driving in Juarez, and I was like, dang. We went into this one bar. It was called The Cave. Dude, like, literally pieces of the roof fall off. Because it's so old and it's like the Flintstones. I was like trying not to rub up against the wall because I was like, if I get scratched, I'm probably going to get like hepatitis or something. You know?
Come on, did they have hepatitis in Bedrock?
Yeah. No, for real, it looked like Bedrock. And then the drinks, they had those 3 liters of Lariate. And that's what, and then it says it had like just different flavors of the sodas. And all they would do is mix it with, it just said rum, vodka, tequila. On this glass bottle. It didn't have no brand or anything. And the guy that owned the place, he would be walking around with the microphone all over the place. But really what ended up happening that I didn't want to go there anymore is that my cousin was dancing on the dance floor. A piece of the ceiling fell down and hit her in the mouth. And yes, and knocked her teeth out, dude.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
I'm like, I'm not going back there anymore. So then we went to Derby. That's another one. And that one, it looked like, have you ever seen the movie Dusk Till Dawn?
Yes. Like that bar?
Yes, exactly. And there were horses coming out of it. So there's like these still horses in the corner. And they're coming, like, it's 3D. And there's like red lights and they got red eyes. And I'm like, I was like, I think I'm in at Dusk Till Dawn. Where's the vampires at?
So is this in New Mexico or Juarez?
This is Juarez.
So it's, do you ever miss away. Those types of places though?
Yes, all the time. I mean, like I like getting around and I'm a downtown girl. So everywhere I go is downtown Phoenix. But to get out and travel and do good stuff. And like there was always a designated driver, of course, because... There always is somebody that doesn't drink, but I'm like, no, you're going to... Well, whenever I check in at the border, I was with the designated driver, and everybody walked across, and I was the only one that stayed in. And they're like, declare yourself, and I was all, okay, Native American. They're all, no, you have to just say American. I was all, Native American. Oh, yeah, I got in trouble, but I finally said American and they let me across. But yeah, that's called $10 drink and drown, ladies and gentlemen.
So, okay, so when you moved to here, what school did you go to?
I went, when I first started school here, I went to North.
North High?
North High School. And I was a freshman. And it was culture shock. Like,
so what was it? What was that area? Because it's so different now. So back then when you moved, what was like the demographics like in that area?
It was all Chicano. It was gangster. Like, they had LCM and 9th Street, and like the East Siders went to school there. And like, I was trying to be a chola. And I'd be like, hey. Because I had a draw when I moved here. I was all, hey, how y'all doing? Because Tucumcari is like literally 30 minutes away from the Texas border. And I grew up going to the mall in Amarillo. So I had this draw, and I would always say, hey, y'all, how y'all doing? And like, people would call me country girl. They'd make fun of me.
Don't
like,
the girls in the club call you a country mouse, don't they? Are you country mouse,
I'm
city
a country
mouse,
yeah. And yeah, that's what they're telling me. They're like, you're a country mouse and come into the city rats. Yeah, I got, yes. It was culture shock for sure. And then I found my way to ravers. And like,
that was your peoples?
Yep. I was like, there I am. That's where I belong. So it was game over after that.
So did you stay at North, or did you?
No, I actually moved around. I went to North for my freshman and half of my sophomore year. And then I signed myself out of school and went to Camelback. So it was at Camelback.
So what was it like over there? Was it completely different? Or
yeah, there was people, there was girls named Barbie. You know what I mean?
So another type of culture shock.
Yes. It was a mixture between like, so on that side of town, like, so Camelback kind of serves the Arcadia district, but also serves like the east side of Phoenix. And so you got people that went to Creighton and all that. So like from McDowell all the way up to Camelback, I think it is. And so it's really brown, you know. And then you also have the people that went to, that are in the Arcadia area that have to go to there that don't fit into the Arcadia district. So you have these like girls named Bridie and Barbie. Okay, yes, Bridie and Barbie. Those are the girls that I could not stand. And those, they ended up, Bridie ended up working with me at freaking IHOP, and I hated her. I hated her. But anyway.
So like, did back then, was there much mingling between the two different like types of crowds though?
No.
It was segregated, right?
Yeah, it was segregated. Except for like Bridie, she liked the bad boys. She used to say, oh, I want myself a bad boy. So like, I actually conversated with this girl. Helped her get a job because I'm nice.
That's how you still are. Yeah.
But she ended up with this boy, and he's so bad. He's a brown boy. Whatever. Stupid.
Was he just brown? Is that why he was bad?
Yeah. She would come in her brand new, like, she had a convertible car. And
was it like a rabbit?
I think it was like a Miata or something like that. But this girl had a car, and we were only in 10th grade. I was like, dude, I'm like, I have to take the bus. And I got to go work at IHOP. She always gave her tables away. She never, ever served anybody. So I would like collect all her table money, like, because I would take her tables from her.
So you're on more for me?
Yeah. And then I would use all that to go to rave. So,
how old were you at that around that time?
16.
Was IHOP your first job?
Yes. I was Susie Pancake. I would get dressed up in this big old pancake. I got dressed up in this big old pancake gear and go out to the side of the road in the middle of the summer and dance around and almost die.
Did it have no fans in it or anything?
Yeah, there was no fans in it. I would get out, I'd take it off, and I'd be like almost dying. I was like,
this is the 90s, okay?
Yeah, there was no fans. But somebody would always come out there to bring me water so that at least I was hydrated.
So you worked at IHOP, and you were going to school, worked at IHOP, and then you were like in the raver scene at the same time?
Yeah, yes. So I lived for the weekend. And back then, like, I see the ticket prices now for all these festivals and these quote-unquote raves. Holy smokes. Like, I would be all up. I think the most I've ever paid for a rave was like $30. That was it. And that was like the highest price you'd ever pay. Anyway, and it was a great DJ lineup. Like, you were paying for people that were coming from everywhere, you know, and now I'm just like, it's so expensive. And why? Like,
do you remember your first rave?
Yes. My first rave was Monsoon, and it was in 1993 at the Civic Plaza, and they had the Shredder sound machine. So they had speakers from the top to the bottom. I used to be a bass head, so I like to put my head in the speakers. And that was only $20. And it was good, but I had to go home early.
So how did you end up there? Like, did you get a ride? Did you take the bus?
These people came around. It was called Monsoon. But the next, so I was only able to go for a little bit, for like literally an hour. So then I had to leave. But the next one was called Cyber Slam. And these people were, I was going to North at the time, I was a freshman. And these people were coming around with all these different, the flyers were awesome back then. Like, I still have all these flyers. And everybody put a lot of time and effort and money, and like, they didn't have the printing technique that they do now, you know what I mean? Like, but they did really great jobs on all these flyers. And I still have them, like I said, but this guy came and he's like, hey, have you ever heard of a rave? And I was like, it was kind of like on the border of like drugs, you know? I was all, yeah. He's all, yeah, have you ever heard of a rave? I was like, yeah, I've heard of a rave. And then he's like, so do you want to go? There's this one called Cyber Slam. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm going. And this one again was at the Civic Plaza, and it was on par with Monsoon. It was good. But the next one that I went to, it was a while. It took a little while for me to go back to another one. It was called Pineapple. And I got my tickets at Tower Records on 40th Street and Thomas. And I asked him if I could have the flyer. And it was actually so far. This was whenever Scottsdale used to be separated from Phoenix.
Yeah,
I know. It was at the airport hang, you know, where the airport in Scottsdale is. It was out there and it was pitch black. And there was literally 75 people, I think. And my husband and I were the only ones that were brown. And I was surprised. I was like,
were you like, okay?
Yeah. Well, the reason why I say I was surprised, because we were the only ones that are brown, is because I used to subscribe to the, I not subscribe, but I used to buy every Street Beat magazine that used to come, and that used to be a publication that was out of Southern California, and it was part of the Lowrider magazine. Like, it was a little branch, and it was called Street Beat, and they covered party crews, they covered raves, they covered the club scene. So it was my experience by reading that. By the way, I got my first Street Beat magazine in 1992 in Tucum Carey at the store. My mom got it for me. But so I was already woke, okay?
I was into the scene.
She's like, I had been in tune for a while, guys.
I already knew what was up. But whenever I came here and I seen that the scene was different than what I seen in the magazines, I was a little bit thrown.
Were you disappointed? Because yeah. It's like popping in the magazine and in California, and you come here and you're like, it's supposed to be the big city and yeah. There's nothing going on.
Yeah, I was. And like, and then all of a sudden came the party crews. So I started raving, and then here comes this whole other branch, and that's where it was brown, in the party crew scene.
So, okay. So you were part of a party crew?
I was not part of a party crew. You were not.
So why not?
Because I was a raver.
Okay, and that's what I want to understand. So, there, like I said it before, you kind of explained it on the last episode, but...
Well, I think this is my take on it. So ravers had a whole different culture. So housers were party crews that went to house. They had house parties. We had warehouse parties. There's also drugs is a different, that makes it a little bit different. The DJ, the music, everything that has to do with it is a little bit different, slightly different. The clothes that I would wear, house girls or party crew girls would not wear.
So like you said, you were more candy kid style?
Yeah, I was candy kid. I wore jean clothes, big old pants that were like 50 inches around on the bottom circumference wise. Like I would wear small shirts, and I had my hair like an inch in length all the way around with barrettes all over it. I used to wear all kinds of jewelry, like candy kid jewelry.
All yeah, these I know what you're yeah. saying because I know what it looks like. So it's like
I used to wear like colorful. I was colorful,
like green shirts yes. and stuff, right?
Just things you wouldn't, you would not see at a house party.
Because house parties were more, I feel like they're really brown, but they're like more kickback style and not necessarily
house parties.
But
yeah,
like
house parties. Yeah, but like the house scene, it was. Like Rebels and I want to say it was in line with like instead because gangs went out of style eventually. Then like some people still there were taggers, there were tagger crews, and then there were people that wanted to dance and there were dancers and stuff like that. And so they were housers and groovers, you know. And then there was ravers.
Yeah, because like I said, when I was starting to come around that age, that's when it started like. I don't want to say dying off because the scene is still there, but it wasn't as big of a thing.
Oh, the raver scene?
Yeah, like it yeah, started no, like it dying died out. Down.
Yeah, it died out for a while. And it's funny now because they, like, there's a thread in Facebook and it's So I raved in the 90s in AZ.
Are
and
you
it's
in there?
So funny. Yes. Yes. People post up pictures all the time and I'm like, oh my God, you know? And it's really cool, but like, a lot of the scenes, so whenever the raver scene in Phoenix kind of stymied, it ended up being that it kind of went to the underground hip-hop side, you know?
Like evolved people kind of evolved, gravitated?
Yeah. They gravitated towards that more so than anything. So
when you were doing the whole raving thing, what were some big spots in that you went to in Arizona, like that you think
raves,
just like different raves? Because it was like,
there were no clubs. There were clubs like at the beginning in the 90s, like at the beginning when I first started in 93, like I said, I said in the last episode, I was or whenever that I was in, I was 14 at The Works in Scottsdale. I was 14 years old at a club. And it was 18 and over, but I was there. God only knows. But my mom never questioned me. I was a good girl. Kind of. But I was out there and I would dance and I would have fun. I used to see Marcus Schultz DJ live out there. But my favorite raves definitely were... the Americana Hotel. There was one called Phoenix, and when I walked in, I know a lot of people have to be familiar with Z Trip. He was just actually here.
Yeah, I was gonna say
he was here at the Van Buren not that long ago. This I think last week.
Yeah,
and I remember walking in. This is 15, 16 year old me walking in, and there's these lights. It's dark. But there's these lights and there's this stage where he's like up there with his turntables and I can see him and I was waving at him because I was just waving and then all these beams of lights were hitting off of this because the Americana Hotel used to be a really nice hotel. And so there's this chandelier that hung down and it has all these like glass things. So you'd see all of the lasers.
So it's just like...
Yes.
So where, like, around what area was the hotel at?
40th Street in Van Buren. Okay. So it was kind of grimy. in the 90s, it was grimy. And then the next one is Downtown Underground, which is where the train station is downtown now. And it was actually underground, so it was an underground parking lot. You walked down, and you would walk down, like, if you were to drive your car down and then go down. It was on the first level on the bottom, but it was underground. And all, that's the first time I heard Children. And I seen there's all that smoke that they blow, but there was this flat laser beam that was going up and down and up and down. And you could just see all these clouds. And then you hear that song. You guys have to listen to that song. It's called Children by Robert Miles. Rest in peace, Robert Miles. But you could just see, and it's like a piano intro. And you just, it's like heaven. You're like, you're walking into heaven. And I had these polyester... these polyester big huge bell bottoms on with this flowy like sheer colored shirt with my hair in two buns and like I walk up and DJ Brownie is playing and I was just in love and I was like, oh, this is never gonna happen again. And then what happens? I leave and then it's over, you know, and then I just have that in the back of my memory forever. But
so what attracted you to the raver scene?
The clothing and the music.
It looked fun, basically?
Yeah. It didn't look like anything anybody was doing, because you had your gangsters, you know what I mean? You had your girls that just wore those striped shirts. In the 90s, it was always striped shirts and jeans and belts. And, like you know, just plain. And I like to be out there. I used to work for this place called, I worked for clothes. And it was called Recycled Madness. It was across the street from Band-Aid Strip Club. So right now, I think it's a Peruvian restaurant.
Across from Band-Aid's?
Yeah.
Band-Aid's is still there.
Yeah, Band-Aid's is alive and kicking. Well, this lady, her name was Liz, and she used to go dumpster diving and get old clothes from everywhere. So it was vintage, and I used to go with her. She had this big old bus that we just go traveling, and it was a school bus. And we'd go get stuff and then come back, and then I'd get to go through it with her. We'd wash everything, and then we'd put it out for sale, and I used to get to get all the stuff that I wanted.
Like first dibs?
Yep, first dibs. So I had a lot of vintage items. Like I used to love to wear bell bottoms and also like platforms. And this was before 1995, when everybody started wearing platforms, and then I used to get called hippie girl and all these weird. That's why I left North. Because I was getting picked on. I was getting bullied because of the way I dressed. And it was because I wasn't wearing the striped shirts and the regular jeans, you know?
With, yeah, you weren't. And there's nothing to me, like, there were people totally into that lifestyle and they're all about it. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I feel like sometimes when you're brown, like, they think you have to
fit a certain thing. So there were gangsters, you know what I mean? There was gangsters, there were just regular people going to school, there was just, but I've always been a little bit more
I don't care, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I don't care. I'll dress however I want to dress, I'll do whatever I want to do, and I've always had that mentality. And so whenever I was doing that, I still continued to do it, but it really did hurt whenever I got made fun of. So I wanted to leave the school.
Is that why, too, you're so, like, welcoming of everybody? Because you're like, yes. You don't want anyone to feel bad or negative.
I don't like to see people being picked on or neglected, because I like people to be recognized for who they are. Like, the person that's just, like, sitting there, like, for instance, there was a girl that she was very quiet, but she used to make all kinds of different things. And I asked her if she could make me some bracelets and stuff like that. And I used to wear them, and I used to like pump her up. You know, I'm like, see, you could do all kinds of stuff. You know, and that's what I used to do with her. And I used to try to have her hang out. And I mean, it goes back all the way to like elementary school. I used to be hanging out with the popular crowd. And I would always invite the little nerdy girl to come and hang out. And I'd get in trouble by all the mean girls, you know?
So since you're so good to other people in that aspect, though, but are you good to yourself? Because I know some people, it's easy for them to do that for others, but it's hard for them to be kind to themselves.
I think I'm really kind to myself in every way that I can be, except for the fact that, like, health-wise, I need to concentrate on I need to love my body, you know what I mean? And yeah. Take care of it, because it's the only, my vessel. Yes. It's the only thing I got, and I'm not going to be able to be around if I don't. And I'm hitting those, I'm 40, so it's hectic.
Just the natural stuff that comes with getting older, so.
Jeez, I'm only in, 2 months deep into 40 now, and I feel it already. I'm like, Jesus. Like, oh, I make noises when I get up.
Like a nana?
Oh, no, dude, like, yesterday I fell, okay?
Oh, my gosh.
So, I work right here on 58th Avenue and Glendale. There is a train that goes by all the damn time, stops traffic. I'm outside taking a walk, and I freaking fell in front of everybody that was waiting for this stupid train. And I fell, onto my knees, and then, it was so dramatic. It was not even funny. I was like, and then I tried to get up, but I couldn't get up. I was like roly-poly-oly, man. I was trying to get us. I was trying to throw. Oh, man, it was bad.
Did anyone, help you, or were they just
This lady got out of her car, and I was like, no, I'm good.
You're like, you're making me worse.
I was embarrassed. Like, she made the effort to open the door, and I was like, I'm good. But I seen people laughing too. I was laughing.
You have to laugh at yourself though. You know what I mean? You can't just sit there and be like,
this
oh,
this is
damn.
Truth. I ain't no skinny girl, so you know. I felt it. I was like, damn.
So back in the day, were you ever on The Loop?
Yes.
So explain what The Loop is to people that might not
know.
It
was a party line. You would go on there and you'd say, so this is this is La Muñeca giving a shout out to blah blah from so and so part and crew. Hey, we got this party coming up.
Do you know what yours said? Because it's like you had your own inbox essentially. So it was like social media before social media. Well,
so I would just talk about the parties that I went to, and sometimes I would get on there and be like, oh, all y'all. I would be mean sometimes, like, because that's my only platform to be mean. I go, you guys think that you're so cool. It's where the raver's at, though.
Dang, look at her. She's not afraid. She's like, I'm going to tell you.
But then I'd be like, okay, over and out. I'd say stupid stuff like that. I'd be like, over and out. That's how I would always end my stupid stuff. Oh, it was dumb.
So did you ever go to, so what kind of crowd went to El Paraíso?
The Housers.
Yeah, so did
I would go.
You would go because yeah. You guys would intermingle.
Well, a lot of my friends were Housers. A lot of my friends were in the party crews, and they were rebels, and they did that thing, you know. And so I would go. I'd go and I'd have fun, and I'd love it, you know. It was always it was different, and like from going to a rave, it was different. But I can tell you that the alcohol consumption at those events was more so than at raves. At raves, it was more drugs,
right?
Psychedelics and all that junk.
So you said before, too, that there was, like, a whole subdivision, too, of, like, how you're saying there was, like, the Latin house and, like, so, like, what was all that like? Like, you said because you guys kind of had to create your own space, right?
Well, yeah. Well, what it was is there was Latin house, there was house, there was trip hop, there was jungle, there was all these different genres of music, you know, a speed garage. Later on, there was speed garage. Like, I don't know. I think the most commercial speed garage was, like, Spin Spin Sugar. You know that song where it has...
I don't even know if I know that one. I have to look
it
up.
I got to show it to you, yeah. So it has really deep bass lines and stuff like that. But, like, there was all these different genres of music that everybody would listen to. And there was always all these different rooms when you'd go to a rave. But whenever you'd go to a party, it was just house music or whoever was there. It was hard house. Hard house, Latin house, or cumbias. So there was always that... it was always in the mix, like
the influence
culture.
Was
yeah.
always there.
Yeah, yeah, culture was always in the mix at whenever it came to house parties and you know that scene.
So, did you ever go to any raves outside of like Arizona or anything like that?
Unfortunately, no. But I did go to desert parties, and I would go. We went. Oh, my favorite was Basics out in Strawberry. It was a Strawberry, Arizona, and I didn't know that we were going that far. I thought it was going to be like where like Bumblebee Canyon is. No, we went all the way like 15 miles out
you
of
Flagstaff. You kept driving and you're
yes.
like,
Yes, and then I had to have the car back to my dad by 6 in the morning.
So did you, were you late?
Yeah, no, on time. Just like my dad was walking out the door to go look for me.
So was that night crazy?
Yes, we seen people lose their bumpers. I didn't have a proper jacket. I froze my ass off. I got thank God for Food Not Bombs because they had a hot chocolate. Let's see, what else happened? Literally people were getting lost in the forest. It was cold. It was so cold. It was October.
Oh my gosh, October. It was freezing then.
It was October, probably 1997 or 98.
Oh no.
And I didn't know we were in the forest where they have the Red Rock and stuff. So it was right before, you know, it's Strawberry Lake, whatever. I think it's called Strawberry. Anyway, Stoneman Lake Road, that's what it was, because I remember that turnoff. And then I finally got back home, and my dad was like, what the hell? What's all this red on my car? where the hell did you go, little girl? I was like, I went to a rave, daddy. And he's like, you barely just got, what time did you leave? I was like, I'm going upstairs to go to sleep. I'll see you later. Bye. Have a good day at work. There's gas in the car.
You're like, that's all you care about. Gas, I'm safe. Bye.
Yeah, he took off. But then he opened the engine. He called home and he's like, did you know that there wasn't even a spare tire in the car? Stupid girl.
You're like, I don't know. I just want to go to my rave. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I wanted to do.
So how did you guys, because now I think kids don't understand like the effort that went into promo and stuff back then. So how did you guys do your promo and how did you communicate stuff like that?
Oh my God, like you see these raves nowadays, they got months and months and months of time. So that's why they get so many freaking people to go. Back in the day, okay, I don't know if you guys remember Patriot Square in downtown Phoenix, mm-hmm. where, what is there now? Copper Square?
Copper Square, yeah.
Okay, so back in the day, that was one of the meeting places. Where you would go and somebody would give you a phone number and then you'd call that number and then they'd tell you the directions to the party. Or you would call Swell and Swell would get you the... So Swell used to be it was
a clothing record store, right?
Yeah, it was a clothing record store. And you would call their hotline. There's always a hotline and you'd call it all the way up until the day of the show and even hours before the show before they would let you know.
Is it because anything could change at any time?
Well, they would shut you down. Police could find out about it and shut you down. I remember there was this one called Scrambled Egg. It was over there by the old Macayos. There used to be a tire shop, and there was a rave inside there. And it
the
was,
original Macayos?
Yeah,
one?
Original
okay,
Macayos.
Woody's? Okay.
Yeah. So there, it was there, and they had house speakers, and there was a DJ and all this. We were breaking into some place to, yes... It was truth.
That's how you did it.
Yes. Well, then a bunch of taggers came and like blew up the spot.
And y'all, thanks a lot.
Yeah. Oh, I was so mad. I was like, why you got to ruin it for everybody? And then pretty much we got shut down and we had to go find somewhere else to go. Another rave that I went to was called Bubble Jet on Van Buren and 12th Street. That got shut down too.
So do you miss back then like how people would more band together?
Tremendously. Yes, I mean it was a smaller community and you had to be in the know in order to know. You know what I mean? It was more exclusive, I think. Not that it's exclusive. I don't want to use that word. I want to say it was just more special.
And I feel like I hate to say this, but this is the only thing I could think of at the moment. It's like right now, like we were talking to last week when we interviewed Moni Loca. She's like, right now it's really popular. Like people want to capitalize on like. Oh, like Chicano culture or brownness or however you want to see it. She's all but, and you could just go on Instagram and be like, oh, I'm going to get some Cortez. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. But they're like back then, or like you had to, if you saw somebody dress
a certain
way.
You had to walk the walk and talk the talk and you were about it. You didn't just go and look online and see what people are doing in order to make it happen. So that's what I'm saying too, because I'm on the art front too. Like I'm in the Chicano art scene, and I got to give much love to Patrick Murillo and the Crafty Chica because they're one of the pioneers, of course, with Zarco Guerrero and Carmen Guerrero too. Like they're the ones that started Chico, and that's Chicano art. That's the Chicano art culture. And whenever Anna and I, when we started Con Safos. What Con Safos was our crafting company that we had in it. It leaned on our own culture, and that's the kind of pieces that we would make. Like we would make shadow boxes and stuff. But of course, everybody has already done it before. It's just a different twist. It's our twist on it.
Your own interpretation.
Yeah, but now it's grown so much. We were the only girls for a little while. Like young women that were doing something, and this was going just back to 2007.
So how did you start? So what did you always draw, or like how did you get involved in that?
What my thing is, my thing was I party planned. So the other day I was telling somebody like I'm the person to go to make a funeral happen. I'm the person to go to make any party, birthday parties, weddings, all bachelorette parties to happen. I'm the person. I'm an events person. Like that's where my specialty is. And I'm also like I'm a networker. I like to talk. I like to go out and meet people that are doing things that are in there that are unique and doing like just doing things, doing the thing, you know. And That's my strong part.
Your strong suit.
Yeah, anyway, that's what got me to where I was. But I've always like made invitations, like crafted. And then from there, I was encouraged by the Phoenix Fritas, like my peers.
To so how paint. Did you get involved with the Phoenix Fritas?
Well, I was in a really bad car accident where I was in a wheelchair, and I had already met, I used to work at AIG, and my friend, her name is Lupita Maciel. Hey, what's up, girl? She was part of like a women's movement, so she played drums in a band. It was like a punk band. It was a Latina punk band, and they're called Elefante.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then she introduced me to like Julieta Venegas and all like that whole, like Tijuana No, that whole genre of music. And Leticia was also part of that, but they also had a clothing company called Chicana Mama, and it was you know, it wasn't Chicana. That was their group of single Chicana mothers, but they also had one that said it was called Chale Clothing. So they would make all these different shirts that were cultural shirts, you know, like they would put like mazapan on something,
or like before everybody. So how long ago was this?
Before everybody would do it.
Yeah, because like nowadays you can go on Instagram and there's like 50 bajillion like.
No, it was
businesses.
Like 2005.
Okay,
like yeah. Back was, then, yeah. And anyway, so they had that company going for them, and that's, and Leticia was part of that, but I didn't know she was part of the Phoenix Fritas. And the Phoenix Fritas were started by, the Crafty Chica and her friends. They just wanted to get together and like to make art and make things happen together and celebrate the life of Frida. So that was why they named them the Phoenix. They named themselves the Phoenix Fritas. So it's already been 15 years. This year's 15 years. So before Frida was cool, the Phoenix Fritas existed.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, I just want to let that you guys know.
Yeah. So anyway, I followed Kathy. She used to work for the Arizona Republic, and she would be on the news doing craft projects on TV.
I remember that, but I didn't realize then. Like, I assumed, I don't know why, I think because she had, like, a platform that she was actually, like, from California or something. So then when I actually connected the dots and realized, like, wait, she's from here, I was like, that's cool, you know?
Well, the crazy thing about it is that her husband is Patrick Murillo. He is in the Rasta Farmers, and they performed, they were the band at my aunt's wedding. And this was a while ago, you know what I mean? Like, he was part of my uncle's band. Like, they played with them and stuff like that. So, I mean, I've known who they are, and I know I've known...
You've been around them, yeah.
So, I mean, it's a close-knit community. And anyway, what ended up happening is I got in a really bad car accident. We started a book club called Las Ovaquitas. And then Leticia let me and Anna, she found out what we do. As far as the crafting goes and how we were doing First Friday, I asked her if we could go to the, she invited us actually, and I was like, yes. And I was in my walker, and I walked in, we crashed their Phoenix Frida meeting, and that's, from there, it's just history. Like, we started, and this is in 2008, and we started, so it's been 10 years that we've been associated with the Phoenix Fritas.
So when, because you were going through that big event in your life, it was really traumatic and you had a lot of stuff happen, like, was art a good, like, outlet for
that's
you?
That's what made me, that's what helped me get through it. So I was reading, I think I read 68 books in, like, 6 months, and all Latina art, all Latina authors or Latino authors. And then, like, I was painting and I was crafting and I was doing everything that I could to keep myself sane at home in my kitchen.
Did you listen to music and
yep,
stuff at that
time? I was listening to Maná. I was listening to Quetzal Guerrero. I was listening to a lot of different Latino artists. That's what I was, that was what was in my playlist. You know, and also not only that, but like Chicano ska. A lot of Chicano ska was in my playlist.
So around what year was this?
2008.
So that really wasn't that long ago when you think about it. Like, it was only 10, 11 years ago. Yeah. It's like, so did you, so before your accident, what were you, kind of stuff were you
low
into?
Riding?
Low, okay, so I know when you, so you used to do, you were in the raver scene, and then when would you say that
okay,
about
so
Die,
we were in the raver scene, and then Like, when that died out, I was probably about 20 and I started going to college. And then I was just kind of focused on family. And my sister just had a baby, so we were like all about that. I was trying to
document
his life.
I'm 20. Yeah. I'm
now he's 18.
Yeah, he's a full grown person now.
He's a damn man.
Yeah. I just dropped off his birthday money before I came here.
So then what were you doing? So how did you get back? Because I know...
Well, my husband's always been associated with law writing, and he's from the South Side. His brothers always had cars. They used to have a car club called Los Crusaders, and they would cruise all the time. It was really great. But then I guess what ends up happening is that you can kind of branch out into, like, we'd start going to, like, Baja Tilly's, you know.
Where was that at?
That was, like, on Broadway, and it was down in Tempe.
So what was that?
They played cumbia. So this was the genres of music. Cumbia, freestyle, Latin house. So AL3.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
Yeah,
my mom would have had his mixtapes, and we would play them.
Well, when my husband turned 30, he's gonna be 46 now. But when he turned 30, I had AL3. I hired him to be the DJ, and he brought mixtapes and CDs and stuff to the show.
Do you remember how his mixtapes were like different colors? Like,
yes, it was cool. He had a Christmas one.
Yeah. So I remember. So I always lived like on the west side of town mostly. So then for like 2 or 3 years, I moved north, and at that time, back in the 90s, going north meant like it's more white, right?
You're in a whole nother land.
Yeah, so it was so weird. Well, I moved to North Phoenix, so it was like Glendale at that time, but around like the Arrowhead-ish area. So
yeah.
I during PE, we had a unit, I remember, at that school that I went to, and it was for aerobics. So it was like aerobics, like step aerobics and doing a routine. So I had to make up a routine with my friend, and she was real shy. So I was like, I mean, I was shy, but I was like, oh, I have to do it. So I used one of AL3's tapes to do my routine.
Was it cumbia?
No, it was like house and stuff like that. But then, because everybody else there, I'm like, it was like one of the only non, like, you know, white.
They didn't understand
it. They didn't understand. And they're like, what is this this girl dance?
What kind of moves is she doing?
Yeah, like, I remember some of the people who played like Aqua Barbie Girl stuff, and I was like doing AL3's tape, and they're like, yeah, no, like, you need, like, I remember I got a good grade, but I could see the teacher's face. She did not understand. She was like, okay.
Yeah,
like,
this is my culture. I am doing something. I am, yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I'm introducing you to stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Not just guacamole.
We're more than just food, guys.
Oh, my foot is falling asleep. I got to stand up. I'm going to hold the mic.
Go ahead. So, okay. So then you said, your husband, you guys were in the lowrider scene, right? But then you said you were involved with AZ Rockabilly, or?
Yeah, actually, that's how it kind of happened. Is like, so we started cruising, and we would be on the South Side. We have a 57 Chevy wagon, and, you know, we'd go out. He finally got it all restored and everything. Has hydraulics, lays all the way to the floor. Really awesome car. He still has it. And anyway, we started going out there, and Fernando Figueroa, he's the one that started AZ Rockabilly. He's been doing this damn thing for a long time. He has a lead sled, lays low, awesome. It's called the Blue Demon. Anyway, he had AZ Rockabilly started, so he was already doing all of these shows. But thing about him is he had the knowledge of all the bands in LA, like Viernes 13. He had La Banda Scalavera. He had the Los Angeles Skankers. He had all these different bands that he knew of, and they're all Latino, and they always, like, he'd bring them out. So whenever you talk about rockabilly scene, there's the scene that is part of it that's very, very gabacho, and then there's a scene of that's puro Latino, you know what I mean? So anyway, he was tapping into that. But he also had like Creepshow. He had like all these different artists come out, psychobilly artists and all that. So he was very how would you say, transparent. And he would always want to cater to everybody, not just one, to everybody. But for somehow that got lost, and he just got tired and he stopped doing AZ Rockabilly. But anyway, but that's how we got into it. As we started cruising with him and hanging out with him, and then he started seeing what Anna and I were doing with Contrafos, so then we ended up vending at his it was at the Manzanita Raceway. Jose y los Diamantes played there. Was it Diamantes or Diamantes? Yes. I don't remember. Anyway, but they played like swing music. And it was awesome. Oh, my God. And we were just like hooked from that moment on. And we just started, what can we do? When can we vend with you? What can we do to help you? So we started organizing show and shines and having bands and DJs and stuff like that out there as well. And then that's how I ended up figuring out that, hey, I'm good at this. I'm going to start doing this. Started doing it. I ended up having a split and ended up moving to New Mexico, doing it in New Mexico, still maintaining my art stuff, still maintaining my status here as well. You know, I never tried to leave, so that way people, like, it's always good to stay relevant, you know. And so I would always come back, go out, see everybody come back, go out, like, back and forth. But I was making a name for Arizona out in Albuquerque as well.
So around what year was this?
This is a span of, like, from 2007 to 2010-11. And then finally I came back to Phoenix in 2011.
And is that how you ended up doing the Arizona-New Mexico connection show?
Yes, that's the main reason why. Because I ended up knowing a lot of artists that were out there in Albuquerque and Santa Fe, just in general in New Mexico. So I was like, hey, you know, we have Randy B. I ended up getting my own gallery, and I was like, hey, I got a space that I can make stuff happen. So let's go ahead and do this. And I started making the AZ New Mexico Connect happen. And so far we have nine shows under my belt. So, you know, it's weird how it all just kind of...
just like a domino effect. It's like one thing leads to another. Yeah. So do you feel like people don't realize all the work that actually goes into organizing a show and getting things together?
You know, people like to attend, and God bless them. Thank you so much for the support. However, yeah, it takes a lot of work, a lot of planning. You know, like right now, I kind of have an idea of what's going to go on Saturday, but I don't have everything all down pat. And I got to get in touch with people for this Saturday.
Confirm,
you know?
And yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into planning an event. And it's, you know, all you promoters out there, much props to you guys. And I don't think a lot of them get that much love. I have somebody that I mentored for a little while, and they throw shows and all that, and they're an artist as well, but they don't get invited, but yet they invite people out to do their stuff, but they don't get invited themselves to these other people's
things. That's what I hate, and that's what I tell people, like, all the time, like something that I always try to say, like, you know, you should associate with people not just because you want something from them, but because you like them and you believe in them. So it's like, it's you know, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. Like, there's an element of that I feel like is missing.
Yeah, I mean, it's giving respect where respect is due, you know, and also recognizing, you know, giving props to people. Like, people, there's this man, he's a young man, and his name is Edgar Fernandez. And this guy, he will always give love to me. I'm the first person to ever put him up on anything. He's doing phenomenal. His life is all about art. It is his heart, you know what I mean? In the Phoenix Art Museum, he's been able to travel and do things with his art because of the fact that he's done nothing but progress. But I am very proud to say that I helped him start off. You know, he had that talent, but ever since then, he's just, it's momentum. He's grown.
I think it's...
I'm not trying to take props for his capabilities.
You're like, I'm not trying to take props, but I like the fact that, like, we were able to
real
connect.
Real recognizes
and
real.
Yeah, and there was a sense of gratitude.
He never forgets sort of me, thing. Ever.
Oh, that's so sweet.
You know, and he invites me to every one of his shows. There's a few people that I gave their first shows to them, and I don't hear from them anymore, but yet they're out there.
Yeah, I know. I definitely know.
So, and I'm not saying that I'm hurt. Oh, ouch, you know?
No, but...
But it's just like, oh, I see you.
I see you. Because, I mean, I know probably everybody who's kind of out there mingling and stuff like that. But I think, too, because I've experienced an aspect of, like, where people want to use you as a stepping stone. And you're going to run into that. And I tell people, you don't let that discourage you from still wanting to connect with other people. Because
if you let that happen, you're not going to do nothing. You ain't going nowhere. You know, you're going to sit there and
I know
and
you probably had your... We don't have to talk about it, but I know you probably had your fair share. Everybody has.
Way more than one. I'm 40. I've been in this game for a little while. I'm like, I have a lot of life lessons learned. You know, and that's what you do. You learn from it and you move on. And you say, okay, I was put in this person's life for a reason. And that's it. And you move on. You're like, cool. Did my job. on to the next.
So how did you, I know how you guys, because we talked about how you connected up, back up, because I know you and Helic have always known each other for a real long time. So what is it like now that you're, since you were a consumer for so long of music, like going to shows and promoting and like, but now, that you're behind the table, so how does that feel like? What is it like?
Okay, I gotta say that this past Friday, shouts out to Uso Car Club and Rose Wax, because I had to play for 3 hours, and I've never done that before, and I've played for 30 minutes, okay? That's the longest I've ever really played. Like, I played and messed around and stuff like that, but I actually did the damn thing, you know, for 3 hours. And I was like, wow, you know, they were coming up to me, telling me, you know, you're doing a great job, thank you. Like, dang. And a lot of people are really surprised to see a girl behind the turntables. So, like, I got a lot of props for that. But I always have this thing where I don't want to call myself a DJ, because I don't feel like I'm a DJ. I feel like I play records.
You're a track selector. Yeah.
That's what I like better. I think I like that a lot better. But I have a want to be a DJ now that I've gotten...
A taste of it.
Yes, I want to be. And I'm learning to scratch, and I'm learning to mix a lot better. I'm learning to use different instruments, like using the fader and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's fun. And I've been collecting more and more records and more equipment, and being able to be self-sufficient, so that way I don't have to worry about using anybody else's anything. I've taken my turntables home and have practiced at home. I've practiced with different genres of music. It's been fun, and it's been an experience, and I'm learning every day.
Yeah, and I think that's what I tell people who start to want to get into, like, playing, like, for people, is that, like, you're not going to be the best right out of the gate, but, like, as long as you're having fun and you continue to work on your craft, it's like, you're not going to be freaking DJ Jesse Jip overnight. Like, it's going to take time. Yeah. Like, and I see a lot of these people, like, D-Gents, Coco, De La, all these crazy...
Well, I just went and seen D-Styles, like, this past Wednesday. Like, I was blown away. And I love D-Styles. Like, I've seen, this is the funny thing, is, like, seeing him now versus seeing him when I did a long time... Well, I've seen him with the Scratch Pickles, but I've seen him with... I've seen him by himself, like, years ago. And then as, what, just coming back into the scene after, like, being gone for a while. And that was, like, in 2008. I want to say 2008, 2009. But it's weird to see him now that I've played records. And I've used the equipment. Not exactly his equipment, but I know what he's using and what he's doing, and I pay attention. So I have a bigger appreciation for it. And, like, when I see D-Gents, when I see Les, when I see anybody that's out there spinning, I have a whole different appreciation for it. 100% a whole different appreciation.
Yeah, and that's what I feel like to people. Like, don't be scared to just go and play. And if you mess up, it's okay. It's part of the process. It's part of learning. Like, you're not going to be some crazy freaking scratcher overnight, but it's like, it takes time. These people that you're watching, like, they've dedicated their lives to doing this, and they've been doing it for years, so don't let it discourage you if you go out and you see someone who's amazing, because it's like, you know, they put their time in. Like, yeah, you have to put your time in too. So
yes, and that goes with anything that there is out there. You know, you can't sit there and become an aficionado overnight. You gotta put time in. That's true.
Yeah, and that's what I say, putting your time in, I being think
that's
respectful.
That's the best advice you could probably give anybody, is just take your time, do it right.
Exactly. So that's what, like, more like we talked about before. Now she's behind the table, so it's interesting. And I always like to watch people, just because I don't know, I like to see everybody has their own style and their own, like, what they like to play or do. So it's always interesting, like, watching, because they were like, oh, if you watched, you went to this DJ night, or are you going to go to this one, like, a few days later? I'm like, because it's completely different.
That's it. Is and why not, you know, why not go
show some support,
like Manchester, the DJs, what is it called, at it's on Wednesdays, on Saturdays. It's like the goth night kind of thing.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, Rips. Yeah. Is it Shadow Play?
Yeah. I absolutely love it. Like, right now, my number one record is V13, and it's like, it's bad. So it's Sodom, it goes, good morning, sinners. And it goes, Sodom and Gomorrah, let the DJ play. I was like, yeah, that's my song. I'm like, I got that for Valentine's Day, so I'm excited about it.
So were you involved in the hip hop scene out here? Like, as far as like watching music, like you said?
Yeah. I went out. So, you know, whenever the transition happened from the rave scene to the hip hop scene, that's when I took my step back and I started becoming like more family oriented, and like I wanted to focus on my family. My sister just had a baby, and I kind of like stood back, and I had just lost my brother too, so I had to take time for that, you know. And I just didn't go out, and then when I it was all family. Or lowriding. Family, lowriding.
And that's low a version riding. Of family, too, like yeah. The whole lowriding aspect of it.
And then whenever I went through my split, here I come back again. And that was the first place I actually went to was my cousin, Jeremy. I was all upset, and I'm like, I'm going through this shit. Like, what? Let's hang out. And he had just moved back from San Francisco. And he was gone for a long time. And I was like, I have a rental car. Let's go out. Let's go have a good time. You know, I can get a room and we don't have to go anywhere. I need something different in my life. So my first night out, went to Blunt Club. So I was like, here we are back again. Thank you guys. And I rehashed old friendships. Like
And there was years removed, so it was like a breath of fresh air. So
yeah, I was extremely happy, and I reconnected with a lot of folks, you know, a lot of folks. I mean, I'm talking about people that the rave that I told you about, Basics, like Jacob Chavez, like he was one of my guys. He's my Frito, you know, and I connected with him after years. Like I have video of him dancing because I used to be my favorite dancer. And I have video of him dancing, pictures of him, and like I hadn't seen him in years and years and years since the rave scene. So reconnecting with folks and then hip hop, you know. So it was fun.
So yeah, I remember when I was younger because the Blunt Club lean, like the thing that I'd always seen in the back of the New Times.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah, with Benjamin Leatherman. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Shouts out Ben. And then, like, there also was Hidden House, and then all the...
Do you miss the Hidden House? Because I do.
Yes, it was fun.
I miss it.
Yeah, the Hidden House was my brother's spot when he was here in Phoenix before he moved to L.A.
Yeah, because his brother was kind of in the...
He was in the hip-hop scene.
Yeah, hip-hop scene.
Oh, yeah, I bet you he knows Dom then. Dominic from Dom's Barbecue.
Probably.
Oh, Dom is a good DJ, you guys. I didn't even know. I have a lot of his records here, and... He's not only good at making barbecue and tacos, but he's good at making music.
Like, mixing music.
He mixes music. Well, yes. I'm like, boy, that's awesome. So, yeah. But that was his spot, too. I mean, I would go every now and then. But I also, during that time period, I was working. So I had a 9 to, like, I had to be to work at 8 o'clock in the morning. But believe me, I would be at Blunt Club really, really late and be at work at 8. I don't know how I did it. But I did it. So,
y'all, shout out to me.
Yeah, I did it. I made it happen.
So I just want to say, because I feel like you said, you've been around, you've had your hands in so many different things. So what advice would you give to our community here so that we could like interconnect more, so that people can really like get together and be supporting each other? Because like I said, the point of the podcast, like I say all the time, is so that like if someone listens to your interview and for some reason they haven't met you, which I don't know if that's even possible, everybody's like, but they'll identify with you and be like, okay, like I can kind of see what they're about, and they're more prone to maybe like if they see an event, like, oh, I'm gonna go show up for you. Like, so what advice would you give to
support your scene? Talk to people. Don't be afraid to talk to, like, even if, wait, don't talk to DJs during their set, but wait till after it's done. Talk to everybody, you know. Reach out. Don't be a hater, you know. Don't believe the hype. Anything that you hear out there isn't always truth. Assumptions are not your friends. So just make sure that you get the facts right. I mean, because there's a lot of talk out there, I know that. There's also a lot of people that like to put people down, Don't be that person. Support. That's the network. Support. Network. Support.
So, where do you think the disconnect is? Whereas back in the day, I know you said the community was smaller, so that's probably a part of it, and everything's so much bigger now. But like, what do you think the difference is? Because though you have places like LA, though, where it's always been a big network and there's more history there, mm-hmm. but it's like they still understand the concept of like showing up and supporting. Community. And what do you think it is about here that it doesn't like permeate with
their
culture?
There's cliques. That's what it is. I mean, there's people that are posers that come in and think that they can just all of a sudden pick up when they
like
don't.
And be gatekeepers when yeah. I mean, there's no need for gatekeeping, but I feel like I see that, and not even necessarily just the music stuff that we're involved in.
No, it's in everything. I mean, like, there's people that come in out of nowhere, and they haven't put in time. I'm like, give that respect. You know what I mean? Like, don't sit there and say that. More power to you. You can do this and do that, but also, you know, recognize who your pioneers are, and give respect. You know what I mean? Like. Don't sit there and hit on people and try to discourage growth. You know what I mean? Like, always encourage it and just invite people out. Don't build any walls. Don't be a Trump.
Exactly. Don't be a Trump. So, like, too, what I notice and what sucks is, like, sometimes we'll go to, like, big old, like, exhibits where these people put a lot of time into like all these shows, but then we'll go because we're like, oh, we'll check it out to support or whatever, see yeah. what's going on. And then you see, I feel like more of the submissions or more of whatever's going on is more like from people that aren't even from Arizona. And I'm like, come on, we have to like show up, like we have to even submit ourselves and put ourselves out there, because then I'll see like there's a lot of, which is like I said, there's nothing wrong with that, like Cali people or people from even like Nevada, and I'm like, where are we, like why are we not involved?
See,
with
that's
other?
That yeah, that's what I'm saying, is like you need to first of all remember your community, invite your community first, build around that, like your community should be your core, and then you build around it and build around it. That's everything is secondary to your community. And that's my opinion, you know what I mean? Like you it's nice to have like a headliner for something, even like with art and stuff, like, but make sure that you're including your community as well, because that's a big slap in the face.
Well, that's how culture dies too. Yeah. It doesn't keep growing, because it's like, don't, you can't, like,
that's kind of Arizona though too at the same time.
I know, because Tucson gets the message. It's just yeah. like if Phoenix is just weird. I love my city, I'm born and raised here, but it's like there's just an aspect of it that's what makes me feel like, man, like what's going on here? And I feel like I'm not seasoned enough.
You're doing a very good job at trying to break that barrier by doing these types of things. You know what I mean? You're interviewing folks, you're doing all these different things to make things happen, to have a discussion. And that's actually where it all begins, is whenever you start talking about it, then things, you talk about it, it starts evolving, it's a conversation, then finally there's some action, and then pretty soon everything will be better, you know? I mean, it's like a fight, you know what I mean? Do you really want to throw blows, or do you want to talk about it, because there's more productive, you get more productive things out of being talkative about.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, just like reaching out and like, because I've even noticed there's people that have told me like they've connected with others because of like the podcast, like this. So I'm like, oh, like we're having a little, you know, a little ripple there. Which
this is the thing, you know. Too, is you're talking to me. You're talking to me. So people that have, it's like this, because I know people don't like me. There's people out there. I don't know
there's
why.
There's people out there that don't like me.
I don't know
like
why.
Either, it's okay.
Maybe I'm just too happy. But anyway.
just my raver, days.
Yeah. Plur, peace, love, unity, respect. So anyway, you're talking to me, and you're giving people an insight about who I am, and maybe people hearing this that have some type of this idea of who I am.
Well, they don't even know you.
They
really
don't know me. So you doing this speaks wonders. Like, it helps. It helps the community.
Because you get to speak for yourself. Yeah, it's not me speaking for you.
It's like that person that's homeless on the street, you don't know what got them there. You know what I mean? You don't know.
I say that all the time. Someone's kid. That's someone's baby. Yep. That's someone's brother or sister. Like,
you can't form opinions based on nonsense, based on non-truth.
I like how you say assumptions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's a lot of, I'll be the first to say I'm a party girl. I go out. I have a good time, you know, and my bills are paid. I go to work every day. I do everything I need to do. I'm still out there being a productive citizen in the community. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing anybody can say about me that will change that's who I am. So, you know what I mean? Like, that's first and foremost. And that's what I say is, like, you don't know what I've been through. You don't know what happened to me today or tomorrow, what's going to happen to me tomorrow. But this is a little bit of a leeway into who I am. So,
exactly.
Yeah. And then, I appreciate this.
Oh, okay. Thanks. I'm like, so I was going to say, I'll just bring it up on mic. I was going to talk about it off mic. But maybe we could plan something where, like, the Crate Creepers and the Rose Wax, we
that would
do
be
a little
fun.
Thing together to show, like, you know, ladies can work together. Little,
yeah,
little,
I mean, it's unity.
Yeah, exactly.
UNITY.
we'll play Queen Latifah.
Yeah, that'll be our song.
I've heard other women say that. I mean, they just don't get along with other women, and I know.
Ooh, that's a big one. I'm like, nah, girl.
That's a red flag. That's what when someone tells me that, I'm like, red flag.
You can't get along with another woman that you, what? Like, no, that's truth. I don't care. That is truth.
Like, I try not to judge people off of what other people say, but if something's coming from your own mouth and you're saying that to me directly, I'm like, I'm not that you're a bad person, but it's like, to me, it's just a red flag where it's like, I don't know if I want to, you know, spend a lot of energy.
See, but
on
this
you.
Is me. Is I've been friends, and I still am friends with people that are like that. But like, I'm like, it says a little bit of something about you if you can't have female friends.
That's me. I'm like, how would you not? Like, don't get me wrong.
But
I'll still be your friend.
I'll be your only friend.
Your only.
But it's because I'm the one that will see past your past all of that.
Yeah,
you
know? I know what you're saying.
But yeah, so I think I'm an only friend to a couple of people.
Aw. Well, that says a lot about you in a good way. So I just want to say thank you to Mo for giving us her time. And do not forget this upcoming Saturday at the Desert Rose. It's going to
March
be March 2nd.
Starts at 4 p.m. Goes until 1 p.m. Phoenix Funkettos, Crate Creepers, Rose Wax Vinyl Club, Ayoda Crew, DJ Bless, DJ Less.
The Untouchable. Who, if people listen to the podcast, we call him The Mijo.
Felix. Felix. I remember when I met him, I was like, this boy is an old soul, man.
Yes, he really is. Like, I was like, he's
seen him walk in all creased up with his hairnet. I was like, boy, look at you. And he's all riding his car. I was like, oh, I got mad respect
when
for
he had
him.
His Cadillac.
Yeah. I was like, he'd get out with his whole crew. He had he don't walk the main yard alone.
He will. He's not scared to, but he don't have to because he got a little people.
He's got an entourage.
Yeah, and he's so sweet though. So don't make assumptions about Felix if you see him. He's a very good person. He has a good heart. That's always.
And he's about the community. He's out there. He's out there getting signatures all the time. You know what I mean? He's educating folks on Raza. So, yeah.
He's not afraid to tell you either.
Yeah.
Which is good.
I like his Man Crush Monday stuff. They're fun. Those are really fun ones.
I know. He's such a good person. So, everybody's coming together, and we're going to be there at the Desert Rose. So, roll through. Like she said, it's from 4 to 1. So, you have time.
Yes.
You know, it's going to be open.
$10. Late. Please come through.
Donation to go towards.
Win some free. Stuff.
Yeah, come win some stuff. There's going to be all kinds of things. So just roll through, have a good time, make the donation if you can, because it goes towards a good cause.
Team La Dama. Hashtag Team La Dama.
Yeah, so if you do want to keep up on it and you can't remember for some reason our Instagrams, remember the hashtag Team La Dama. Click on that hashtag and you'll see all the stuff on there.
We bout it.
Exactly. So one more time, our IG is Just Keep Spinning Podcast, or email is justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever it's called now, Google Podcasts, Google Play, CastBox, anywhere you can find a podcast.
Stitcher, Spotify.
And then just really quick, what are the social media handles you want everybody to follow?
Rosewax Vinyl Club, Moni @_mochacha_mata. I'm on Facebook under Monique Mochacha Sanderson Mata. We're on Facebook as Rose Wax Vinyl Club as well. Yeah, hit us up.
Yeah, and you can also catch her on Wednesday nights at Jobot.
Yeah, Wednesday nights at Jobot from 8 to 10 every Wednesday. Also, first Sundays of the month from noon to 3 on KDIF 102.9 FM, LPFM. I think that's about it. Or Lemoncade. We try to DJ here every Sunday from 3 to 6 at Lemoncade, except for first Sundays. So.
So like we said, thank you so much to Mo for letting
Thank you for having me.
Yes, I love, just like I said, the reason why I love the podcast is because it's like I can give a little small platform so people can speak for their own self. And that's what
it's
I love.
It's a large platform.
Oh, thank you. And I love talking and getting to know people's stories. So it's always so interesting. But I guess that's pretty much it. And go ahead and say here, what is it? Over and out.
Over and out. 10-4.
Don't stop digging, it just keeps spinning.
Thanks, guys.